Good morning. The open meeting for this Wednesday, August 30th, 2023 will now come to order. The first item on our agenda is the proposed final audit report on Communication Workers of America, A 21-09, agenda document number 23-18-A. Presenting from the audit division, we have Ms. Brown and Ms. Orock. Mr. Perel?
Good morning.
Hi.
Chair Lindenbaum.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning, Chair Lindenbaum and Commissioners. Before you is the proposed final audit report on the Commissioner Communications Workers of America COPE Political Contributions Committee, which circulated to the Commission on July 7th, 2023. The audit report provides the Commission's recommendations for the following findings outlined in the proposed final audit report. Finding one is misstatement of financial activity. Finding two is disclosure of occupation, name, employer. We are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions or discussion? Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to this audit, I'm prepared to approve the proposed final audit report, but I did want to bring to my colleague's attention something that Mr. Gold put in his response, which I think is important for the commission to consider going forward. He goes on to explain a lot of technical reasons why the proposed final audit report on the committee's misreporting of occupation and employer information occurred and how they had to file amended reports for the 2019 and 2020 cycles rather than filing that information via a Form 99. They had that information readily available to them in a searchable spreadsheet, but they really didn't have any way to communicate it to the commission in an effective manner. So they had to go through this arduous process of amending their report. So I think it's important for us going forward. And I know, Chair Lindenbaum, you've initiated a program to look at forms and other things that we may need to change. And this might be something that we can address in that process of making sure that we make it easy for those that have to file reports with us to use formats that they're currently keeping their data in to be able to file that information. And looking at the communication workers, obviously there's someone who they have to file quite a few reports with us. And if they have this type of problem and they're keeping up with this type of data, I think it probably makes it very difficult for those that are less frequent users who are keeping their data maybe in the same format, but they have to come back and generate a whole new cycle of forms just to get us the information. So, but with that, I appreciate the time. I appreciate audit's efforts in this, and I appreciate Mr. Gold bringing this to our attention in his response.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor, and I will plus one you on that and say that I agree with everything you said there. And we are looking at opening up a process so that we can really get more of this feedback. I think that this letter really sparked something in all of us, that it's a really great time to take a look at this all the processes we have in place. And again, thankful to the committee for doing that. Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to Commissioner Traynor for highlighting that. I'd like to ask our staff to maybe walk us through some of the steps that might have been taken to help the committee with making that filing. I did read this. I will admit it was a while ago, so I'm not as up to date. So I do appreciate the highlight of it. But is this something that we encounter in a regular basis?
Yeah. Okay. Is it to
me? Or Ms. Brown can go and answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Correll. Thank you, Madam Chair. Committees do from time to time reach out to us and let us know that they have information available that they would like to provide to us in a spreadsheet format, in a Word document, something that our current systems don't allow for. But in all cases, we do make ourselves available to assist committees in reviewing any information they'd like us to review prior to their submission to ensure that it's accurate, that it's complete, and what have you. And we did the same in this case.
Thank you to the staff for that. I appreciate and also agree. So you might say it's number two that I'm third it on this list and everything, but we would just continue to just be as helpful as I believe you always are. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah. And I will plus one that as well and say that when we reviewed that, we talked to staff in your divisions, and it was very clear that all the staff was trying to help them to the best that we can, but we sometimes need these processes that may need to be updated to work with everyone. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also agree. Like Commissioner Traynor, I was struck by that aspect of Mr. Gold's letter and reached out to the staff to ask about it. And I completely agree with what Commissioner Traynor said and with what my colleagues have echoed on that. In my conversation with the staff, it's my understanding that the ability to upload these kinds of spreadsheets may be something that we will be able to accommodate once we have finished the long-awaited update to FEC file. And I'm sort of looking at our staff director to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think that is something that we should be able to do in the future and should be able to do in the future, because I agree it's asking somebody to make a bazillion amendments when they just have one chart that they could have uploaded, that we should be making it easy for people to correct the record when they are trying to do so, as they did in this case and Gesundheit. And along those lines, there is I also intend to support the proposed final audit report, although I would like to make one amendment to that. There's a sentence that pops up in three different places on pages 3, 6, and 12 that says, as such, CWA did not materially correct the public record. And I know what staff meant by that, but the committee actually did put a lot of effort into making a whole lot of amendments to the public record to correct the public record. And I think that that statement is confusing and would make it sound like they didn't really try. And I think they really did try. The finding remains, but they really did take a lot of effort to try to amend the public record. So I would propose that we delete that sentence on pages 3, 6, and 12. And I don't think that it will affect the substance of the report. It slides out fairly easily.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to turn to staff. So I'm able to look at Ms. Orok and Ms. Brown, so I don't want the auditor to think I'm ignoring you. But have there been additional amendments? Have they been able to complete this?
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee had indicated that they plan to file additional amendments, but as of this morning, they have not yet filed them.
Is it, Madam Chair? Mm-hmm. What's outstanding, or can you give me a broad number of what remains outstanding?
The remaining outstanding information, 7,758 contributions totaling $246,000 roughly.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any further discussion before we move to motion? Any motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would point out that they did, according to the report, CWA filed amended disclosure reports, which corrected the disclosure of occupation and name of employer information for 10,934 contributions from individuals totaling $423,840. However, as Ms. Brown pointed out, there's still 7,758 contributions totaling $246,877 that remain. Having said that, I move approval of the proposed final audit report on the Communication Workers of America COPE Political Contributions Committee, 21-09, subject to deletion of the line, quote, as such, CWA did not materially correct the public record, end quote, on pages 3, 6, and 12.
Any discussion on the motion? Yeah, Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the efforts that the committee has done in this, and also it also is an additional reflection is that we need to make it easier for these things to be done. But when I look at the numbers, for me personally, I don't think that I'm going to be able to support that motion. Overall, I agree with the other findings in this one, but for me, I'm not going to be able to support that. So at the appropriate time. Thank you very much. Just wanted to highlight that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion passes 5-1 with the vice chair, Commissioner Dickerson, Trainer Weintraub, and myself in favor, and Commissioner Broussard opposed. Thank you all. And we will move on to the next matter. And next up is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines for Montana, A21-04. And we have Mr. Smith and Rominski joining us, and welcome back. Whenever y'all are ready, and Ms. Lee, and welcome whenever y'all are ready.
Good morning, Chair Lindenbaum and Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines for Montana, which circulated to the Commission on May 25th, 2023. The memorandum provides the audit staff's recommendations for the following findings outlined in the draft audit report, draft final audit report. Finding one, receipt of contributions in excess of the limit. Finding two, disclosure of debts and obligations. And finding three, disclosure of receipts. We are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, questions and discussion? Commissioner Traynor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have any questions for staff other than to compliment them on the work that they did in this particular case. I know that it's very difficult dealing with these numbers. That being said, I do have some specific concerns over finding one, the excessive contributions. And I know in 2010 that the commission did approve the use of sampling as a method of going through these particular audits. But in looking at what we have here, I think that it's problematic in this particular audit. So I went to look for court cases and things like that that we could point to say when is it appropriate to use sampling and when not. There's a lot out there, but I think the most something that really jumped out at me was actually a case out of California, Duran versus U.S. Bank. And there, the court talked about the use of statistical sampling methods when they would be appropriate. But they also mentioned that we have to have due concern for the party's rights when we employ those statistical samples. And we have to make sure that the sample is not too small, that it's random enough, and that there's no large margin of error. And then in applying that here in the Daines audit, if we look at the dollar value that was the dollar value universe here is in excess of $27 million, which was over 569,000 transactions. Of that, the number that was tested was a little over $364,000, or a sample of 465. So that's a sample of about 0.08% of the total number of transactions that were sampled here. And then if you look at the margin of error, I think the margin of error here, the range in the margin of error is about $400,000 from a low on the mid 100s to a high in the close to 600,000 there. And so in looking at that, the amount of excessive contributions actually found in the audit was what we show in the report is $214,701, which is well below what the actual finding was. And so I think that sampling did not serve us well in this particular case because we have such a wide margin. You know, the sample size is a little low in what we're using. So I think in the future we need to expand those. But I see some of those same problems without going into the actual numbers in finding 3A with regard to the disclosure of the receipts. And so for that reason, I'm not going to be able to support finding one or finding 3A in this particular audit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Colleagues, further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Lee.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify, sampling has been in the audit program well before I even started. which was a while ago. I never liked to say how long, but has been in there at least since the 1990s. Just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So I agree with Commissioner Traynor. I wanted to give a little additional color. I had some experience with forensic auditing earlier in my career. I'm not opposed to the use of sampling and audits. I think here the difficulty is that the commission's being asked to make a finding down to the dollar with fairly wide confidence intervals. And my concern is twofold. One is misinterpretation of that granularity by the public. And the other is that whereas it may or may not matter here, I do have broad concerns in a future matter about wide confidence intervals in some way implicating our referral thresholds. So I agree with Commissioner Traynor that I would like to see narrower confidence intervals. And I understand that that can be a tricky thing as a matter of mathematics and practice, but I share his discomfort in making a public finding on the basis of this evidence.
Other discussion?
Yeah. Thanks, Madam Chair. I have a slightly different point. I mean, avoided advanced statistics issues in college. My issue is with finding two. I thank the audit staff for all their work on this. I think it's a judgment call, and I just have a different judgment about whether to credit the committee's representations and evidence in favor of their argument that the add by invoice should not be included under a misreported debts. And so I think we're all looking at the same body of evidence and what they brought. To my mind, I think it is enough, especially in the absence of countervailing evidence that their representations are incorrect. And so for that reason, I'm not going to be able to support finding two as presented. Obviously, there are other debts and obligations that they failed to disclose. This is about, I think, maybe about a quarter of the amount is represented by this particular add by invoice issue. And so what I would support ultimately is a approval of finding two with the deduction of that $108,750 from the final amount. Thank you.
Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is directed to the audit team. Did the committee provide any records supporting their claim?
Madam Chair,
yes.
They did not.
Did you make a request for these records?
We did.
I'm concerned is that we might not be conducting ourselves in a consistent manner as we do throughout the building. And if we're going to create these different standards, then, well, I'm not prepared to create the different standard. I think that the invoice itself, I believe, had due upon receipt, and the kind of general acknowledgement by a committee that this might be done in the industry without some additional outside evidence to support that leads me to support the conclusion that's made by our auditors. So I appreciate the explanation, but I won't be able to support. I'm supporting the recommendations that we have before us today. So thank you.
I'll just comment that was exactly my take on that as well. I was very much open to that argument, but I didn't see anything that really indicated that, and I wasn't familiar with that practice.
Yep. I guess a question for the audit division. Isn't it the case that, they made representations to us as part of the audit, but they also provided an email response from the treasurer about this issue?
Madam Chair, if I could ask my team to respond to that.
Madam Chair?
Yep.
There was an email from the treasurer that stated that most likely that this had been put off until they had done the ad buy, and it was actually requested of the vendor.
Yeah, I could say I would have liked to see something from the vendor. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe in other instances, we were able to go back to the committee and ask for emails, documentation from the actual vendors, and they were able to provide such documentation in those cases, but not for this particular $108,000 invoice.
Madam Chair, was it the committee's position that, well, let me back up and say that what the treasurer had stated is that her recollection is that they were returned for further clarification to the vendor. And then I believe what she said, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that her conversations with the vendor took place over the phone. But if the audit team can correct me about whether that was what they had said is true or not, that would be helpful.
One moment, Madam Chair. I believe there was a qualifier. I believe there was language such as may have.
Take all the time you need.
Madam Chair?
Yep.
So the direct quote from the audit letter that the treasurer sent is that she said, I would assume we decided not to purchase the June 15th, 2020 Connell Donatella invoice until a future date. It was actually purchased and a wire was sent on 9/10/20.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
I also believe it was the attorney who said that it may have been a phone conversation. And that's why they can't provide written documentation.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I think there are other ways to back it up, right? It could have been, you know, after the fact, you know, right now they send a declaration affidavit from the vendor. You know, there, I would need to see a little bit more for this. Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The same for me is I can appreciate that there might've been some kind of ambiguity, but with right now, all you have is information coming from the committee and the treasurer itself. It's the treasurer's responsibility to collect and maintain these records, and particularly when there's outreach during an audit. The commission we've been very open to accepting outside forms of evidence to prove these things, and some type of communication from that vendor would put me in a comfort level to be able to consider removing this. Without that, I won't be able to support a motion at that time. But thank you for the explanation.
And I'll just add on the sampling matter that I think when this was first raised, I really appreciate Commissioner Traynor digging into this. I know we dug into it initially and had a number of conversations with the staff about the history of this and what it looks like. And I am comfortable with the way it was done. As I think everybody's set up here at some point in this discussion, that we really appreciate the audit staff. Our audit staff does pretty incredible work as they dig into all of these reports and all of the questions they get from commissioners. So thank you all for everything you do. We are truly grateful for all of your work. So with that, any further discussion or?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I wanted to follow up on that last point. I also want to compliment the audit staff. I'm not sure this is obvious to people who haven't worked in multiple areas of the law, but our audit procedures are unusually challenging and difficult because they are occurring against a legal background where we really don't have the concept of materiality in the same way that you would in other areas that are being audited. And that creates very substantial difficulties for the conduct of audits work. And I wanted to be clear that my disagreement with this recommendation stems from that background and not from any disagreement with audit and how it conducted itself in this matter. They've been handed a very difficult mission.
Motions. Commissioner Weintraub.
I'll start with one big one and then we'll see whether there's any piece of this that can survive. In A21-04, Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum of Steve Daines from Montana, I move approval of the Audit Division's recommendations.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion fails 3-3 with Commissioners Weintraub, Roussard, and myself in favor. Vice Chair, Commissioner Trainer, and Dickerson opposed for the motion.
John.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I was not aware that we had a problem with the second one because I thought that one was going to escape because it doesn't involve sampling. So I'm going to try that as a standalone and see whether anybody, we can pick up another vote on that. In A21-04, Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines from Montana, I move that the commission find that SDFM failed to disclose debts and obligations totaling $373,967.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion fails 3-3 with Commissioner Weintraub, Roussard, and myself in favor, and the Vice Chair, Commissioner Dickerson, and Trainer opposed. For the motion, Commissioner Weintraub.
Question for my colleagues. Is there some subset of that $373,000 that you would be willing to approve?
Madam Chair, thank you. Let me just do that as a standalone. In the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines from Montana, A21-04, I move approval of finding 2, disclosures of debts and obligations, subject to reducing in the ADRM's amount in violation by $108,750 for a new amount in violation of $265,217 and making any corresponding technical and conforming changes in the proposed final audit report.
Yes.
Mr. Vice Chairman, if I might ask your indulgence, could you just move the amount that you're willing to approve and not the removal part, which I don't actually agree with?
Madam Chair, let me withdraw that motion. Let me make a new motion, which is in Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines from Montana, A21-04, I move approval of finding 2, disclosure of debts and obligations with an amount in violation of $265,217.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And motion passes unanimously. Further, yes.
I'm going to take another stab at finding 3, assuming that I'll ask anybody who knows the math better than I do to correct me if I got this number wrong, but I believe that there is still $948,218 in that finding that is based on actual transactions reviewed by the audit staff without resorting to sampling. So I'm going to make a motion for that amount, and because that's still a fair chunk of change. I think it's worth trying to make a finding on that. In A21-04, Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Steve Daines from Montana, I move that the commission find that SDFM failed to correctly disclose receipts totaling $948,218.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Right, I think that's it. All right. Yeah. Oh. Anything missed?
Did the commission not intend to make any motions as it relates to finding 1, Madam Chair?
I think we had the initial.
I believe we can resolve that offline. But I've been advised by staff.
Mr. Guru, please. Okay, Oracle. Oh. Well, thank you. We can resolve the first finding on tally. And with that, we have a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Apologies. If I may, was there any interest in the commission about making motion as it relates to the 100% excessive, those that were reviewed 100%, not part of sampling? Apologies.
On finding 1 or finding 3?
1, I'm sorry. Finding 1.
No.
It could be fine that it's not. I'm just raising the question just to make sure we cover all our bases.
Commissioner Traynor, were you going to
say? No, Madam Chair, I don't want to make such a motion.
Okay. Great. Thank you all. And that's Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for a moment of personal privilege. I doubt this will come as a surprise to anyone who knows me, but Judge and former Senator James L. Buckley passed away on August 18th after our last meeting. His influence far outstripped this agency, and he's been eulogized in higher places than this, but I cannot let his passing go unremarked at an agency so deeply affected by his work. I refer, of course, to his role as lead plaintiff in Buckley versus Valeo, the principal challenge to the Federal Election Campaign Act that we administer. Plaintiffs in landmark constitutional cases seldom receive the credit they deserve. They often labor in the shadow of their attorneys. But it takes courage to voluntarily submit oneself to the glare and scrutiny of our judicial system, especially in opposition to a broadly popular law in the immediate aftermath of Watergate. The Buckley decision guides everything we do at the FEC. To prevent undue encroachment on Americans' right to speak and associate together for political purposes, it put the defining gloss on the language of our day-to-day work: contributions, expenditures, political committees. The warp and weft of campaign finance law is unquestionably the product of that opinion. And while controversial at the time and in insular circles today, Buckley was an unqualified cross-ideological triumph. The 7-1 majority included conservatives like Chief Justice Burger and Justice Rehnquist, but also Justices Brennan and Thurgood Marshall. My old colleague, Professor Brad Smith, a former chair of this commission, has opined that Buckley versus Valeo saved representative democracy in the United States. He may be right, but by broadly endorsing a limited and administrable interpretation of the act, it certainly saved this agency. Judge Buckley did many other things in a long and productive life: a combat veteran, under Secretary of State, lawyer, senator, and judge of the DC Circuit. He left his mark in all three branches of government. If he was less widely known than his brother as a writer and polemicist, he was perhaps the more complete man, meaning Homer's ancient charge to be a man of words and a man of action too. Soft-spoken, polite, and learned, he also gave hope to those who believe a politics of ad hominem and guilt by association can give way to government by reflection and choice. And while it may seem a strange thing to say of a man who lived a full century, he has gone too soon, and I could not let his passing go unremarked here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters that need to be discussed today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Well, thank you. Thank you all. This concludes our open agenda, and we stand adjourned.